Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome you all to Mindful Mud.
I'm Florina Nickley, your host, and I'm a Zen teacher, mindfulness instructor, as well as a body worker and naturopath. This show is about mindfulness and the many ways that we can implement it in our lives. And in today's show, we will explore how mindfulness can support us in using technology in a healthy way. And I am super excited to have a very special guest on today, Erica Marcus. So Erica is a Maine-based mindfulness director and is the author of Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. Her new book is informed by her work with youth as a wilderness youth therapy field guide in Utah, an outdoor educator in Maine, a middle school English teacher in DC, and a mindfulness educator, and then director based in Maine. From past experiences on long backpacking trips and riding her bike across the country, to more recently raising two young kiddos, Erica loves adventures. She is drawn to contemplative practices, mindfulness, silent retreats, yoga, journaling, reading, music, and art as methods to better understand herself and her place in the world. She is grateful for her many teachers, from the impartial woods and mountains to the people who work to tread gently on the earth. She hopes that by asking the questions, readers can develop answers for themselves that help them create meaningful lives. Welcome, Erica. It's so wonderful to have you on the show. Just perhaps for the listeners, how we know each other a little bit. Erica and I, we met like 9 years ago already, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we have been doing two mindfulness year-long retreats together, one in person 9 years ago and the last one last year. So we've done a lot of workshopping and sticking it out and pondering and figuring things out together. So it's a super pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's really, it's nice to be here, and it feels so full circle to keep coming back around to this community and you specifically. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. So you just came from a backpacking trip, right?
No backpacking. Involved.
Camping. I'm tomorrow because I'm going backpacking tomorrow. So I'm all nature oriented. You come from camping. That's right.
Yes, I went with my husband and two daughters and three other families. And speaking of, tech-related or not tech-related experiences, it was just really lovely to have phones away and just spend time together in nature and really intensely just for a weekend, but to just be with each other.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just camping too, and it was lovely to see a huge group actually of teenagers right next to us on a campsite with no internet, like with no reception and nothing. And it was fascinating to see them see these like 16, 17 year olds starting to like mess around with water and trees. And it's lovely. So, Erica, I love this new book you wrote, Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. You know, I think you're so brave to tackling this huge topic that I think we're all wrestling with, really, if we're honest with ourselves, right? And that's a fairly new thing, having a teenage at home. I'm like, yeah, I didn't grow up with that. So we as parents have to like completely look at it in a new way. We can't draw out of our own experiences. So I really, really appreciate your approach in this book and just the way that your like way of just putting it out there in the way of like not judging or not like you need to do this. It's more like, hey, how does that feel kind of thing? And it makes it so much more wonderful to read it and not feeling judged, because who wants to do that, right?
Yeah, it felt really important to me. I was working in a STEM high school with students, and I mentioned this in the book, but I'll sort of speak it out loud. And I think my first reaction was a little fear-based. I was like, oh, this is really bad in all of these ways, and like sort of coming at them a little bit, and they were not there for it. They were like, this is our life. It's intertwined. Like, there are great aspects to it. We love it. And it was really helpful for me to take a step back because it does feel really useful for myself. And I also think for others to just pay attention to what's happening. And so my intention with the book was to give us tools and ways of paying attention to our experience. And when I started opening it more conversationally with my students, I was like, ah, yes, of course. No one likes to be told what to do, or no one likes to be told something that's so integral to their lives is bad, right? Like, that's not a conversation starter.
That's so right.
That tone felt really important.
And that curiosity, like just that willingness first to listen and be open. Perhaps there are aspects that are wonderful. I mean, if I just look right now, I can see you and you're over in Maine, right? And we can have a radio show together. I mean, how awesome is that? Wouldn't work without technology, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. So many aspects personally that I experience that I appreciate and really try to hold that appreciation, like really try to keep it alive alongside all the frustrations and whatever else comes along with it. And I think my students had a lot to do with reminding me to like see that goodness and appreciate that goodness that's there. So.
Right. Yeah. And I just really love how you bring that out in the book. Again, there's so much information in there and about, and I would like to kind of dive into some of these aspects that you're throwing out there and that you have been investigating and really diving deep and asking questions that I think are so important that we do ask these questions and that we don't just have these ideas of like tech is bad or tech is good or I don't want to look at my behavior, but that we're gentle with ourselves and honest and like, oh, well, that's an opportunity to grow or that's an opportunity to take my life back or whatever it is for the individual again, right? I think that's so important, especially when we talk about doing that work with teens or with youth, that we don't just from our adult brains think that we know what's best for them, because I honestly think we don't necessarily. I mean, we know in certain levels, but in other levels we don't. We're not 15.
Right.
It was actually funny. I met with some of my friends last night. I hope some of them are tuning in right now, and we raised kind of our kids together. And it was the thing, like, one of my friends was suddenly like, you guys, we're old. Like, we don't understand them. Like, we're old. Like, it's okay. And we're all like, oh, we're old. I just thought it was an interesting way to just kind of like, oh, yeah, remember, we're not that generation. So, and when I remember myself in that time, I wanted to be listened to. I didn't want to be told what to do because I knew what I knew, right?
Yes, sure. And it just doesn't feel very effective to me.
Exactly.
To like assume that I know and should tell you what's best. I think it is important to share what I understand and know and offer my experiences and where that comes from and why I think what I think and believe what I believe. But at some point it's not, I'm thinking about my own children, I'm thinking about my students. It's not my life to live and it's not my decisions to make. And so that's my line. And I'm curious about, where they all are at and why they feel the way they do.
So. Right. So you probably learned a lot from them.
Yes, so much.
Right. So just for the listeners, I don't know if I mentioned that, but this book that Erica wrote, it's really written for teens, and I love the way you write and the language you're using and the playfulness you put in there. And it's packed with so many tools and reflections in them. And at the same time, it's really important for parents to read as well. And of course, any adults or anybody who's using tech, really. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I imagined it honestly sort of being like a side by side read. Like, I imagined parents reading it with their kids, or, you know, adults, educators in a school reading it alongside of their students, and having it be something like a point of conversation so that it's not, you know, we're not having these conversations always in heated moments when we're frustrated with what we see as problematic as adult. I'm speaking as adults right now. But how can we like proactively together have this text and be like, oh, like this page I don't agree with, you know, like what this says, this is not true to my experience. And this page I do, and let it be more something that we can collectively look out at outside of ourselves and discuss together. So that was my hope. And there is a little aside to parents to be like, hey, you know, your kids are talking about, at least kids that I've spoken with are talking about a couple of things. One, how it's so hard to not feel understood, which is what we were discussing earlier, and having parents projecting their, you know, understanding onto their kids. And then, also, yeah, just this assumption that like we're all having the same experience, which is not true.
We all have a different nervous system, right?
Yeah. We're all different. So
yes, and I love that, like the idea of reading it together, right? Parent with child, teacher, which I was like, immediately when I started to read the book, I'm like, whoa, this is such a book club book, like a teen book club. You all, if there's teacher educators out there, this is it for your next book club or your next mindfulness club, right? Yesterday we just had a meeting again on Zoom, thanks Zoom, with other mindfulness folks from SWIP, right? From the school-wide implementation program. And we were talking about a little bit about your book and the radio show that's coming up, and the idea of like, yes, this is such a cool way to implement that in a mindfulness club, in a high school, in a middle school, because it creates that conversation in such a wonderful way. And it's honestly, me as a parent, it's so hard to not be judgmental, right? To not like freak out and go into fear mode about, oh, my child is too much on tech or all the stuff. And then of course, what happens when I'm there is like, all I get is a lot of resistance.
Right. Turns out it's not like a great place to parent from, our fear and anxiety.
it's really not. I bet you know that with your little ones too, right?
Oh, I sure do. Yep. Talk about lots of experiences of that this weekend, and learning and relearning the ways that doesn't work.
And it's so, I mean, the both of you have been on this mindfulness path for so long, and it's still a constant challenge, right? It's never done and it will never be perfect. And I just want to encourage you out there who are listening to this. Hard topics are wonderful because we don't have to be perfect with it. It's like the idea is just to like, can we talk about it? Can we wrestle with it? Can we like, you know, can we stew with it and listen to each other and learn? Yeah.
Well, and I think this is an interesting place where I think that sometimes our technology use can sort of like flatten the nuance and complexity of these conversations. So if we're trying to have them over technology, particularly over social media, we miss so much of the richness and the opportunity to be wrong and like to step back and correct and hear someone else's thinking and allow it to change you in the moment. So alongside of the ways that we communicate over technology, I love being with people, even over Zoom, and allowing for that exchange to happen and us not having to be right. And like, even, you know, it's scary to put words in a book. I mean, I don't know. I wrote this in 2020. It's 2 years later. And it's not quite right to the way I would write it today, you know, two years later. So that's interesting to have something over technology communication or in a book, and it feels so definitive and doesn't provide that flexibility that speaking, right, does.
Right, that flexibility that I think almost a lot of people are kind of losing because of all the text messaging and all the, the social media interactions instead of just, yeah, let's go have some tea together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both and, right?
Like exactly.
We can balance and still cultivate and nurture these times together. I think we can engage in a more thoughtful way over social media, but I do think it requires like practice to be
nice.
Able to dialogue.
Right. Yeah. And some stepping back and pausing and say, is this really what I want to say? Is this beneficial what I'm saying right now? Yeah. I want to go a little bit. It's a really important point, the whole communication part. It's so vast, right? We could really dive into that one. I want to go a little bit into the topic of that, you know, when you say it's hijacking our attention. Mm. And the way you explain in the book how sophisticated the tech companies are doing and are playing with our humanness, basically. It's really wonderful how you explain that. And if you don't mind, can I read a little blurb out of your book?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it again. I don't even know what it says anymore. So.
All right. So basically, how they basically monitor everything we're doing on a screen, mm-hmm. right? It's not just you Googling anything or you being on social media doing anything. You actually watched. And then you write, don't get me wrong, it is not like there is a person with a giant mug full of coffee sitting in the room monitoring you 24/7. But there is a room full of computers that are watching you and making choices, sometimes independent of human interference. And those computers are so sophisticated that they constantly monitor and adapt to your choices and behaviors to make you act the way they want you to act. And you usually do what they want you to do. Okay, take that in. It's like, oh no. You know, yes. It's like this, because they get all the information, right? And it's really, when I read this, I'm like, yeah, I kind of knew that, but man, it's really creepy.
Oh, yes. Yes. The level, as I understand it, as an outsider, right? I'm speaking as someone who's receiving this information from people who are insiders, but really as a lay person in the world, not as an expert, like as a technical expert in this. It's really alarming to hear people who have been on the inside of these companies speak to the degree that we are being manipulated. And we think we are making the choices, but the ways that information is presented to us is actually making the choices for us. It's like, I just read this book, Stolen Focus by Johan Hari, mm-hmm. which is amazing. And he likens it to magic.
Yeah.
Because of the control our attention and make us think that magic is happening, right? Like, but somehow these magicians are directing our attention and we don't even realize it. We think we're making choices, but the magician actually has made us make the choices, which is why these like tricks work. And that sort of analogy was very interesting to me for myself. Yeah. I was like, ah!
Well, and I think in a way, knowing that itself, I think we all have that rebel in us. We're like, heck no, I don't want to be manipulated, right?
Yes.
I mean, I do. I'm like, nuh-uh. Right. They're not going to get my power here, but they do. And so, yeah.
Well, and true confessions for me, like, you know, I've often, I am finding for myself, I have to constantly monitor my tech use to be in alignment with my values. It's never easy for me.
Right.
And I did just read this book. And for me, it actually was very powerful. And I was like, I'm taking a break. Like, I took everything off my phone. I took my email off. I took my social media off. I took my news apps off, and because that's what I felt like I needed right now, based on like the information I had just read and like how it landed for me was like, yeah, I think I don't love what's happening here, so I'm gonna step back.
Right, and we need that stepping back to even understanding, wait a minute, as you said, this is not aligned with my values.
Yes.
It's like, wait, how do I want to live?
Right.
What is it I want to nurture? It's so important. I ask myself this every day because I know how that autopilot mind comes in. And then a day is gone and I'm somehow frustrated and I'm not sure why. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. that mind shift of like, oh, what do I want to nurture and stick to that as good as possible, right? Nobody's perfect. Can you say that? Can you tell us again that name of the book?
Yes, it's called Stolen Focus mm-hmm. by Johan Hari.
Okay, Stolen Focus by Johan.
Why you can't pay attention and how to think deeply again.
I love
it. He should be giving me a cut of his proceeds because I've been promoting him so hard recently. I'm like, I just read this book. And I mean, you know, as someone who thinks a lot about this, it was interesting from his perspective. And then we can talk about my book again, since that's why we're here. But from his perspective, he was really pushing on this idea that like we need to be holding tech companies more accountable. Mm. And that was sort of a side note in my book, you mm-hmm. know, that it's so hard for us as like mere mortals to align ourselves with our values in the face of these strongly manipulative tactics. And I think, you know, we have tools and strategies and ways, because otherwise we just throw up our hands and say, whatever, I'm a pawn, take me.
Right.
I don't want to like go that far, but I also, you know, want to hold alongside that my belief also that we need to be calling on our government and on these tech companies to like really consider their design, and particularly around children. And then considering if that's ethical.
That is such an important point, that we get politically more active in that. Yes, because basically letting them do whatever they want is just not an option. Not when we think about our mental health, right? So we talked about manipulation and hijacking, right? And taking our attention. Can you let us know a little bit? You're describing this wonderful in the book. What are some of these tools that these tech companies are using? Like, what are they getting into? Like, how are they manipulating us so much?
Sure. I mean, I'll speak up like the simplistic level, because that's as far as I understand.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hey, I think most of us, we love that.
Yeah. Okay, great. I mean, you know, number one, notifications. Right? So sounds or buzzing or even just the visual of things popping up and reminding us that something requires our attention is a way that you're not choosing anymore. Your attention has been grabbed by this sound, and sort of in a Pavlovian way, we get on and look. That human sort of drive and curiosity to understand the unknown. Well, what is it? What's on there? I got to see it. So that's, you know, one tool. And they even down to the color of that little number that pops up on an app is red on purpose, right? That's very
it's alarming.
Attention-getting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's alarming. I think another big one that sort of spans video games and social media is that autoplay or endless scroll or just like a never-ending game. So there's no natural endpoint. It's not finite. You can go forever. And so we do. You know, many of us find ourselves in these sort of time sinks where we see a recommendation for you from YouTube and like are curious about what the next video is, or we're on Instagram and we just keep, or TikTok, and just keep going and going, one more. So we're really susceptible to not having that endpoint there.
Like there is no pause built in, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so interesting. I'm just thinking about this one student talking about streaks on Snapchat. So like you get, and I don't even have Snapchat, so this is all coming from them, but you get like little emojis, or when you have gone back and forth every day with a particular connection. And she was saying, you know, I don't even care about this. I think it's stupid, but I need to keep it going. Like,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But I gotta do it, even though, you know. So, I mean, it feels silly, but like, I think each of these little things in total end up controlling so much of what we're doing.
Right.
And like, yeah, just preying on these natural urges. So, I mean, those are, again, just sort of small pieces of that, but
Small pieces, however, they catch a lot of our attention.
That's right. I mean, clearly.
Right, exactly.
We are there a lot. And I think most people concede, most of my students even say that they're on there more than they would choose to be.
I think most of us could say that, right, in a way.
Yes.
So I would love for you to like talk more about how can we gain that power back when we, because I think most of us know that feeling of like, oh my goodness, it's been an hour and where was I? And now I haven't done the dishes, or I haven't like, or I'm too late to go to bed, or whatever it is, right? It's like this, oh no, I just lost an hour of my life kind of thing. So how can we be more mindful or take that power back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of layers here. One is sort of being clear with yourself around like, well, what would you like it to look like? Like, mm-hmm. what have you decided at the beginning of the day, or even more universally, is there amount of time that feels comfortable doing X, Y, or Z, whatever it is that you're doing on there? And then, you know, once you've decided that, if we're talking specifically about like the time, can you put a timer on yourself? And maybe you even need another layer of like, hey, person near me, can you like remind me that I actually am ready to move on? I mean, it's just so powerful, right? The timer is a great interruption to help us wake up and remember this is what we said we wanted for ourselves. And then, that little obstacle. And then hopefully we have the space to move on. So that's one layer.
So making a contract kind of with ourselves. What do I want? Yes, I do want to spend a half an hour zoned out. However, I don't want the whole hour. And then have a timer set for half an hour later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that to be helpful.
Okay.
And then I think... Also, there, if we step back another step, like, why are we going on there, and how does it align with our values in general? Like, what do I care about in the world? And like, what kind of person do I want to be? You know, which are sort of big questions, but I think worth starting to consider. And then, is what I'm doing in alignment with that or not? So there's, again, there's sort of this layer pre-work, if you will, of like figuring out like, what am I about right now in my life? What's important to me? And is this time, holding that, like maybe that there's an exercise in the book that you can be done around that, but you can just sort of journal it out too.
Yes.
And then holding that, like having it up somewhere where you see it and checking that as a way of figuring out, like, is what I'm doing aligning with what I care about?
I love that. I mean, that's basically taking our lives back on many levels, I think, not just right tech.
I definitely advocate for being clear about how much time you want to spend on a screen. And at some point, I do think there's usefulness in coming, like lifting your eyes just physically away from it. But I also believe in yeah, that nuance of like, well, what are you doing and what does it mean to you?
I love that. It's so important, like the idea of like, you know, it depends very much what we do on a screen. I mean, right now we're on a screen, Erica. I don't feel bad about it at all. I'm having a great blast.
I wouldn't want to be on a Zoom all day every day. Mm-mm. Also, right? Even though it's worthy in this moment, there's like also a time limit.
Yeah, you're so right. And I also want to mention that this is a call-in show. And here we have our first caller.
Yeah, I have a background in psychology and anthropology, and I was a teacher. And the best book I have read about this subject of being manipulated is Shoshana Zuboff. That's the author, and it's called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You read that?
I haven't read that book, but I know of her work. It was referenced, I think, in something else I was reading. Yes.
Because I heard her on Democracy Now, and as a lot of my books that I've read, and she just went, she said the things that I was wondering about. Mm-hmm. And anyway, since then, I got, I don't even go on the internet. Because of a number of reasons, but I just don't like being, you know, it's like you're being surveilled, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not like you are. You are. You're absolutely right.
I know,
it's very unnerving.
Like, nah, I don't need to do that. But thank you for bringing this up. It's a very important subject, and I mean, as a teacher, especially the kids, you know, and it's a new culture that's forming, and It may be good or bad, I don't know, but...
Thanks for calling. Yeah, it's intense stuff, right? And the thing is, we do have to remember that, you know, some of us, we don't have a choice to get online. That's just, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have, especially kids these days from school. I mean, there's no choice. You can't just say, I don't have a computer or I'm not going on it. There's no choice. That's why I think it's so important that we know what's going on, that we also know how to take ownership, right? And how we're managing all of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, as someone who works in a school, like, I would love this to be a constant conversation. And again, conversation, like, can we keep this alive for all of us? I mean, staff as much as students, from what I understand, are, you know, wanting to think about it and noticing that it's not always working for them and healthy for them. And so I think just like having ways of reminding ourselves, like, what do I want to be doing right now? Or we as a community, like, what do we want to be doing right now? And is this in alignment with it? And sometimes the answer is yes, even if it's not healthy or
yes,
with our values.
We're not always aligned exactly, right?
Not.
And that's okay. I think it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, what I also very much appreciated as a parent of a teen, that true understanding how important social connection is, that social drive and that part of like why. And I think most of you parents out there with a child that is on technology know that when you say, okay, dinner is ready, or we gotta go somewhere, and you just get a child that's melting down, you know, or start screaming or something, because they are like, I can't, like, not now, right? That not now. What are you thinking? Not now. I'm not disconnecting now. Like, you know, and I love how you I'd love to share another little thing out of your book about that, because I think you're describing this so well. For us parents to really understand a little deeper down what's actually going on in a kid's nervous system at that moment. Mm. So consider, and I'm quoting the book, Consider our ancient ancestors who needed to support one another in taking care of their basic needs. Surviving alone back then was nearly impossible. Our ancient ancestor preparing to leave their families 100% needed friends to survive. And for modern people, making connections, especially during our teen years, still actually feels like life or death. If you had lived in these early communities, it would have been life or death. Now we survive through technology, which offers endless opportunity to feel connected and build relationships with peers. Because of your age, talking to the teen, your body reacts especially strongly to online cues that you are in or out, connected or disconnected. When you have a sense of not being plugged in, your stress hormone levels shoot much higher than those of adults who already have firm networks established. Parents sometimes have a hard time understanding why their kids are so invested in social media or video games because they physically don't get the same intense dopamine and oxytocin hits that y'all are getting from engaging when you do connect. So if there are teens listening right now, educate your parents.
Or some parent put you in a headlock and dragged you to the radio. Listen with me.
I just visualized that. Would that be awesome? Yeah. Can you say more about this, Erica?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I'll speak as from a parent's perspective. I think we don't understand the depth that socialization has moved online, and like whatever we think about that, right or wrong, good or bad, it doesn't matter because that is where a lot of socialization is happening. And if we attempt to like cut that off, or if we're insulting it, that is insulting a social fabric. And so I think, yeah, again, just like bringing an understanding, or like an attempt to understand, that that's part of what's happening there.
Yeah, honestly, just even reading that for me, it was, even though I know that stuff already somewhere, right? It was helpful, like checking in. Oh, okay. More compassion here. More taking it down. Right, more education on for myself and my child. It's just like more knowing and more conversation instead of like freaking out, right, about it again. Yeah,
I think there's a lot of fear. I think
exactly,
and mm-hmm. I have a lot of fear, honestly. Like my kids are 2 and almost 5, so we're not just beginning our journey, but it's already on my mind. Of you know, we all want what's best for our kids, and we're trying to help them navigate something that we don't understand very well, but we understand, you know, to some degree, we understand like does have these like manipulative tactics that they're using on them. And I think some of us end up, the anger or frustration or whatever comes out in those moments is that sense of powerlessness. Like, I'm trying to protect you and I can't.
Yes,
I'm so
absolutely
sorry.
I'm messing
it's
up.
It's really frustrating me.
It's so true, Erica. This is exactly what's going on, right? And yeah. Noticing that. And also, like, for me as a parent, it's always so important that I'm compassionate also with myself, not just my child, but like, okay, taking it down, getting a little perspective here. And then like, okay, what are the solutions? Where can we move towards? Not just fight against something, but what is it that I do want to cultivate? I want to cultivate dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then also perhaps so other options. I mean, the thing is also encouraging other ways of getting together because of their, it's so important for teens to get together. So encouraging that and making that happen as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, this is so niche, and not that I would expect every teen to want this, but because we're talking about mindfulness and teens, like IBME does these amazing transformative meditation retreats. They're not totally silent. You know, there's all sorts of aspects to it, but I have heard young people just talk about how powerful it is to like be together in that way, you know, technology free and practicing mindfulness and being in dialogue and creativity. So I do think having experiences of togetherness that are meaningful, whatever that might mean, it is really helpful.
So. Right. It's, yeah. And suddenly we don't know what we miss out if we don't have it. Yes. Mm-hmm. I also like mm-hmm. that a lot of times you mentioned the question here is not just to be on the screen, but also like, what are we not doing when we're on the screen? I think this is such a good point. Like when we are on whatever we're doing, we're not out in nature. We're not talking to a physical person. We're not taking care of our body. We're probably not sleeping. We're all these things. So making us aware of that. So, Erica, let's talk about mindfulness.
Yeah. I don't know about mindfulness.
Well, we don't really know, right?
No, I say it jokingly, but that is a true statement. I'm still learning. But yeah, let's talk about what.
So, can you let the listeners know, like, what is really mindfulness and perhaps an idea how to work mindfulness with tech? I mean, this is a big question here. But go with it where you like to.
Sure. You know, I think for me right now, always a new definition, but just it's this attentional quality mindfulness that we're bringing to internal or external experiences. And there's like a warmth to it with that attention.
I love that.
So, you know, we can pay attention and it can be cold or critical. And so what does it mean to really be open and curious about whatever the thing is that's happening? That's where I'm at with mindfulness right now. And I think, you know, it can be sort of like an interesting experiment with our technology. I was doing this with some of my 7th and 8th graders this past year, to invite them. We set a group timer and I have them do whatever they want on their tech, whether that's homework or using their phones, and we pause, you know, and just ask them to check in right now, like, what's going on in your mind? What's going on in your physical body? Is there any emotional resonance happening? So the layers of checking in, and then can we also just take a moment to like reorient out of the screen? So with that timer, can I like look around the space I'm in and just notice like, physical things around me?
It's not just two-dimensional, the world.
And it has smells, right? And it has textures and all of these sort of qualities that, at least not yet, you know, our other senses, our other sort of sensory experiences are not, those needs are not being met through the screen. So allowing ourselves to sort of check in and then using that pause point and these sort of questions we can ask ourselves to decide like, well, then what next? If I'm being honest with myself about what I need and what's going to serve me, like, what's the next step? So
kind of get it, be back in a driver's seat kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As much as we can, like reminding ourselves and as parents, reminding ourselves about our kids that like, also it's not their or our fault that it's hard to stop. It's designed that way by very smart people.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? And then it's really intriguing. Like a lot of folks might think like, well, why would they spend so much money and time on having us longer on the screen? These apps are free, right? Or whatever, internet is free. It's like, so what is it they get back? The tech companies, right? Well, what's their pay?
Yeah, they have this term, the attention economy. So now advertisers are paying these companies for our attention and
trippy.
Our data.
Right. So trippy.
And that, you know, it's just so finite. Like What are you hovering over? How long do you look at this thing? Do you click it? Do you not click it? Like, do you, for example, on Instagram decide like, that ad is not for me? They're like, yes, thank you for telling me that, right? So, yeah, all these little ways that they're really paying attention to our behavior and choices to create some sort of profile to know more, a more targeted way of like, well, when do we release that ad and which ad do we use? Which of these three ads and like what product? And I was actually speaking a couple weekends ago with a software engineer about this idea that students keep bringing up of like, well, I was just talking about this thing and then it popped up.
Ooh, yeah.
And everything I've read has said like that it's not what it's not happening that they're recording you. Like they're not actually recording you. Everything I've read has so far has suggested that's not what's happening. And then he was saying they're just so good at predicting our wants and needs. They don't have to listen to us all the time. Mm-hmm. They know what you're going to want or need next.
That's amazing. But so, if yeah. that's, well, do they know more than I do about know about myself, right?
Yes, that is what, I mean, in terms of like
right.
what you need product-wise, that's the implication there, right? And so we feel amazing. Like they're listening, but they're not. They just, no, it doesn't happen all the time, every
right,
moment,
right, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
This is what we do here at KMUD. We take care of the community and the lost critters and the emergencies. And so just a shout-out to everyone. We always accept donations here at kmud.org. Go online. There's a donate button if you like this program, if you love the mud like most of us do. Please help us to keep it going. So I really love when you wrote in the book, it's so important not just that we pay attention to, but also how we pay attention to, right? And this is there's this kindness comes in, and I love how you put it now with this warmth.
Yes.
I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I can feel it. Right? This warmth. We pay attention with warmth. It kind of is this open. It's like when I feel warm, my whole body and my mind is open. If I'm cold, everything goes closed, right? Mm-hmm. So I love that warmth feeling. So the kind of attention we pay, and perhaps I want to read another little something that I really was really loving.
If while you're Go looking, ahead. I just sort of speak to, I think for me, and this isn't true for everyone, but to be able to like bring this quality of attention to my technology, like I really find I have to practice it. So I think some people are more able to like come with a more open, warm, aware attention and show up in that way in their life. But like for me, that's where the meditation comes in and like making that a part of my lived experience so that when I have to be in action and like in my life using technology in this specific moment, but really in anything, then I have that experience, what you were describing, like I know what this feels like. So this is what I'm trying to use here.
Yes. So in the way of like, we can't just say, okay, and from now on, I'm going to use some mindfulness with tech. If we don't have a practice, it's got to be very hard.
I think so. I mean, maybe not for everyone. I think there are people who are more naturally inclined. I've like worked with people who've never meditated a day in their life. And I'm like, how are you like that? My inner mind is like busy and mean and chaotic. And like, I need, I really benefit from a formal practice.
Right.
But I think, you know, a lot of people do. So
I agree. And at the same time, being open, some folks perhaps have a better access to, and I just, again, it takes that honesty and that self-reflection of how is it for me. And perhaps also when we think about, you know, the new generation here, if they are already growing up with some of that help, if they get it at school or through books or through even, hey, there are meditation apps out there for teens now, right? Whatever it is,
if they're already catching it at young age, it could really help with, it must be easier, I think, when you have a young brain and you're training that already in youth, than for some of us who perhaps start, I don't know, some people start meditating with 60, 70. There's a lot of conditioning already happening, even with 30 so, mm-hmm. or 20.
I know, I'm so jealous. I'm like, you don't even know, my students, how good you have it. I don't say this. I just, you know, in my... That's effective. No, I just, yeah, I mean, I do think for kids who it is helpful for and they find benefit from it, right, you don't have as much conditioning. So you get to rewire your brain at a time when your brain is pruning and myelinating synapses, you know, creating these stronger connections.
Exactly.
Like, very good time to decide, well, how do I want my brain to be wired?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. And it, as you said, it's easier. And for anybody who's a little older out there, do not think it's not your brain is definitely plastic and can change, yes. and can completely rewire itself. It's just might take a little longer.
It's harder for us, you know. We got to work at it.
I was pretty lucky. I started with 18 pretty intensely, so I probably have some of that benefit.
Yes.
But it's often, I mean, we're drawn to what we need the most, right? So if you already have a pretty chill mind, you might not want to start meditating. Why, right? But for some of us, Erica... We need the stuff. And I think a lot of you out there who are listening to this, you probably can relate, at least the folks that I speak with. The monkey mind is real.
Monkey mind is real.
Yeah. So just as a little excerpt about this kindness part that I think is just especially, it's just so incredibly important for any age group. A whole set of practices can teach us how to be kinder and more compassionate to ourselves and the world around us. The reason we have a whole set of practices focused on this is because our brains tend to be jerks. I love how you read it. It's just perfectly written. They are sometimes just jerks. Seriously, we all are blessed with something called a negativity bias, which is the tendency of the mind to seek out and focus on the difficult or negative experiences in our lives. This bias means we will likely pick apart an experience and focus on what's wrong with it rather than on what's right with it, or just simply what is with it. On top of our natural tendency, companies want us to think that there's something wrong with us, so they can keep fix it with their clothes, makeup, video games, diets, and so on and so forth. Such an important point, Erica, that you're making here. It's like, oh yeah, if we can have everybody believe that something is wrong with them, I can sell them something to fix them. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's an interesting critique of the wellness industry, right?
That I'm working in, oops.
That we're participating in. Right. Yeah, I mean, truly, like if there's nothing wrong, there's nothing to be bought.
Wonderful.
I mean, besides basic necessity, I need to like eat my food and have some shelter and stuff. But like the degree to which we are dissatisfied with our experience, I think plays a large role in the degree to which we are buying stuff.
The vulnerability is huge when we don't feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it definitely works in companies' favors when we are not feeling good.
Yeah. So which means then really to take care of ourselves so we're less vulnerable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you have
and our
some...
communities. Sorry. Go
Thank
ahead.
You. Thank you. Yes, it is a community effort for sure. And a family community. We do need each other for that piece as well, that we remind each other to be kind to ourselves or that. Hey, do you need a hug? Can I hold you? Let's take a breath together. Whatever it is that we can support each other with. Yeah. And I think teens, again, as you write in your book, they're even more vulnerable to that. Am I okay? I must be not okay. And then with the whole filter thing on social media, right? Wow, that's trippy too. It's like, oh, I should look like my filter picture. I mean,
yes. Yes, and it's been interesting. I was working with a group of students And they do these cool projects. They have like a Friday where they got to work on whatever they wanted. And a group of students had done a literary magazine. And at the back, they put their pictures. And I was looking at their pictures and I was like, who are these people? And I realized it was my students, but they were so edited that they didn't even resemble themselves.
Wow.
And I thought that was really interesting. The need or desire to edit yourself to the point of unrecognizability. Like, I understand that desire to like look your best, and we all have that, right? Or maybe not everyone. I won't speak for everyone, but I understand that. But I thought, and I was wondering, because I'm not on social media with a bunch of my students, there's ethical concerns there, but I was curious about, like, do you edit all of your photos to that degree where I don't know who you are anymore?
I could imagine it really messes with your self-image.
Mm-hmm.
It's that idea of we should be different than we are. We're not good enough. Somehow we're wrong. Something's not right with me. My wrinkles are just strong. Who says that? They're there.
Not our kids. They don't have wrinkles in our face yet, but
I know. But other things, you know. Yeah. Wow. So it's going really fast. Our time together here. It's going.
I was like, how are we going to talk for an hour and a half?
Yeah, you were all concerned. I'm like, I don't think we're going to have a problem here. So I would like the listeners to really get a little bit more insight in that fantastic book you wrote, Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. It's written like talking basically to teens, right? Because you worked so much with them, and it's really wonderful to also hear some of their voices and their insights, which is really quite wonderful that they were able to share with you and that you were listening. That itself is just great. And I kind of learned a lot. I'm not very good at talking with teens, I think. I mean, I don't know. I'm learning. I'm learning. I've never worked in a school. No, I think I'm getting, okay, I need to give myself credit. I need to be kind with myself. I'm getting better at it.
Go.
Because I have to grow up with my child, right? Growing alongside.
Yeah,
sure. That's it. So there is so much wonderful things in here. So much like research that you share that's been done. How are we manipulated? But also like there is so much like tools in there. Like, for instance, journaling questions, right? Like that you can sit down and ask yourself, like, what is the impact of technology on your life, both positive and negative, for instance? I really love that question because I realized what is not helpful or what is not aligning with my values or where do I get hijacked, right? And where is it just really a blessing that I can share pictures with a button, you know, push to my family in Switzerland, or that I can, you know, now have you on screen and talk with you, that even though you're in Maine, right? So these blessings, and then I have less a conflict with just like, oh, techies is horrible. Oh, it's just going to make my child and myself horrible, or we're just going to get dumb or stupid or addicted, or, you know, it's just, so that is very helpful then, because then I can also look at the difficult aspects in a different way instead of just throwing the whole thing in the garbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your book really has helped me with that, just through that journaling questions. And there's a few of these questions in there I think is super helpful. Then there's quizzes in there, like really ask yourself, hey, what are your values? What are you aligning with? What do you want to nurture? It's like, oh, I need to reflect a little bit here. And not that I don't do this a lot, but I think especially youth. I mean, you know, at school, they just get like, put so much information in their brains instead of ask questions, which I really think is what schools are lacking a lot, right? That dialogue, especially when it comes to middle schoolers who are really not open for much information in the first place, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, I think we would learn so much if we could do more dialogue. But I mean, you have taught middle school, so go ahead. I don't know.
Yes. No, I definitely believe in both of those. We could do a whole nother show on my feelings about middle education.
Oh, let's do that.
misaligned they are with like the developmental needs mm-hmm. of that particular age group. But I think they're so thoughtful and reflective, and especially seventh and eighth grade, I find they're like really curious about thinking about their place in the world specifically, right? And so like this is an aspect of that. It's like, who am I in the world? And like, I think they really like trying to understand themselves and where they fit.
Yes. And I have that same feeling. And it's really, they get such a bad rap. Middle mm-hmm. school is like, oh, middle school. You can just yesterday I talked with someone. He's just like, oh, middle school. It's just, you know, you just tell your middle school. She has a child who's going to go to middle school next year. And she's like, I'm just going to basically let a middle school sucks. Just going to get through it. Put your hoodie up and through you go. And I'm like, wait, it's just the school is not designed for them. That's why it's so hard. Right. It's yep. not the middle schoolers that are horrible.
No, we're just doing it wrong.
we're not feeding their needs. And I think there comes the mindfulness again, right? It's like, can we as adults be, you know, taking it a notch back and start actually really engaging with kids and listen and find out where are they? Mm-hmm. I think at that age, it's just all we need to do, really. Mm-hmm. Or most
of so that. Much more. Yeah. And I mean, I also think they're like really up for engaging. Like they want to be doing things that matter. You know, they really like doing things in the world. So
we should harvest this energy, right?
Yeah.
Let's have them sue tech companies. How about that? Let's have a whole year.
Get them going. There are some cool movements happening around that. Mm-hmm. And a little bit older right. young people, I would say more college age mm-hmm. and 18 plus. Yep. But it's good to see that there's energy around trying to get tech companies to.
Right. Right. Again, that's another show, Erica.
Another show. Hope you're writing these down. See you next week.
So the other thing that's so wonderful about your book and the tools that I was talking about, there's a lot of exercises in there. Like, what can we do? How can we pause? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we resist that urge? Because that's not so easy. Like, how do we practice with that? How do we get better at noticing ourselves, catching ourselves before we're down an hour or two, right? You bring mm-hmm. so many different ways of being with that and working with that and playing with that. That is so helpful for listeners. This is why it can be like a workbook between a parent and a child or between a teacher and a class. So it's, and then all the QR cues, codes you have, I mean, the QR code you have in there that leads you to the website with so many wonderful little audio guides. I love those. They're so no, they're so valuable.
Right. Yeah.
Like sometimes you just need to, and especially because reading, I actually wanted to talk about reading and tech, but because I think for a lot of folks, especially teens who are not reading that much anymore, it's such a hard thing to read, to sit down and read a book. Like, because we're so used, like, 1 second attention, right? Mm-hmm. So those little things, and they can sit back and listen to your voice and get a little guidance. No, I really dig it. It's great.
Oh, great.
So there's so much in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope. I mean, I hope it's useful. You know, maybe since we're sort of coming to the end here, mm-hmm. the last thing that I would love to sort of highlight is just this idea that I think it's really helpful, and this is sort of the last chapter of the book, to consider like, what are the ways I'm nurturing myself in these different aspects? So I sort of was riffing on Dan Siegel's The Healthy Mind Platter. And so screen or not screen, are you giving yourself enough sleep?
Right.
Are you giving yourself downtime? Are you going into nature? To the extent that you can, like, are you sitting down and eating meals and enjoying them? Are you engaging in some creative pursuit, whatever that looks like for you? Are you playing? Are you physical? So, you know, I think the opportunity to go through and, again, like, tech is not like one thing and your life is another thing. It's sort of like, here's my life that I'm living in total. And then how does tech fit into that life and allow me to do the things that I want to do that I know will help me live the kind of life I want to live? So I think that's sort of interesting to think about the different dimensions of,
That is so important, right? See the whole picture, that whole healthy platter is really like, I mean, it's no big deal if I'm an hour on my tech, if I'm also tending to my garden and being with my family and go for a walk and do all these other things, then there, I'm still feel like a real human being who is living my life. Yeah, that's such a good point. But if I do think if a kid is at school all day and then comes home and it's just another 2 or 3 hours on screen, then there and eating in front of a screen, then there is an absolute disbalance, and there's gonna be consequences with that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if this is one of the questions in the survey, like how many meals do you eat in front of a screen? And I do think it's an interesting experiment to try not having a screen out while you eat. And what is that like? And like, what do you notice about the food, you know, mindful eating? What do you notice about the experience?
This.
Yeah, it's different, right? It's different than eating when your mind's somewhere else. So,
yeah. And there's a whole, part in there of multitasking you all. So if you think you can multitask, you can't. I love that. Because I think somewhere we all would love that we're able to.
Yeah.
So that was another thing that, you know, I even talked with my son about. It's like that idea of having the phone next to doing homework and then you're trying to do some math and then getting distracted and how much time you're losing in that. Mm-hmm. Darn it, our time is slowly dwindling down, Erica.
Thank you.
Such a blast. Thank you so much, Erica, for sharing your wisdom with us. It was a real delight. If you are listening and are curious about the book is called Attention Hijacked, Using Mindfulness to Reclaim Your Brain from Tech. You can get this book anywhere, really, and or on Erica Marcus's website. And you can also there get in touch with her if you're interested about more things that she's doing. And her website is called wisemindsbighearts.com. Again, thank you so much for listening to Mindful Mud.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.